Hello and welcome to another episode of the Student Planner Podcast. This is your host, Travis, and today I'm going to talk about the gigantic burning dumpster fire that is Department of Education right now. I'm going to talk about the imminent closure order. By the time that I record this and it comes out, I'm pretty sure the order will already be issued, but we already know one is coming at the moment that I recorded this. And we're going to talk about the stop work order at Department of Ed. We're going to talk about what it all means. We're going to talk about what it all means for you. So buckle up. It's going to be a good episode. And hopefully you will leave less stressed than when you started it. So let me start with talking about the closure of Department of Education. So this has been something that Republicans have wanted to do since 1979, when the Department of Education was created by Jimmy Carter. President Ronald Reagan tried to eliminate it. He failed. Lo and behold, we have Department of Education. And then with the Higher Education Act that was passed pre-Department of Education, they amended the Higher Education Act over time. And in the Higher Education Act over time, what they did is they put in a whole bunch of, how shall I call this? Extra provisions that call out specifically who's supposed to do things in the student loan program in particular. So one of the things they talk about is they call out the Secretary of Education shall do fill in the blank, and they call it out about 35 times with IDR regs and about 34 times, I think, off the top of my head, with the PSLF regs. It doesn't matter what President Trump wants to do long term about Department of Education unless he can get the votes in the Congress to overturn those statutes, because the statutes specifically say you have to do this. Now, obviously, presidents don't always follow the law. I know that's a shocker, right? But presidents of both parties often don't follow the law on certain things over time, like history lesson, right? LBJ, like Gulf of Tonkin resolution, like starting the Vietnam War and stuff, escalating the Vietnam War. Obviously, Richard Nixon, everybody knows what he did. Eventually, he got overturned by unanimous Supreme Court with what he was doing. Maybe the only person that I don't know if they violated the law or not is Gerald Ford and Jimmy Carter. I can't really think of anything horrible that either one of them did. Reagan, Iran-Contra, George H.W. Bush, I guess I'm not super familiar with anything there. Clinton, obviously, that hasn't aged well, right? George W. Bush, Iraq War, President Obama. Now, off the top of my head, I can't think of anything in particular, but I'm sure there's something. First Trump administration obviously tried to do things with the Muslim ban, and then Biden administration extending the eviction moratorium when the courts already said that it wasn't legal. That was something that he did. Conservative courts obviously think that him going around the cancellation order with the SAVE plan also is a violation of the law. And wow. Well, I don't usually get welcomed by my son during a podcast recording, but you know what? We'll keep that in. That's kind of exciting. I love you. I love you, little boy. You have fun, okay? That reminds me of the BBC interview where the little kid comes into the studio. So anyways, we'll get back on topic. If we think about the administration, with Biden administration with student loans, right? The conservative courts, they don't think that they follow the law. The Biden administration followed the law with the SAVE plan. With this Trump administration, there's already lower courts that think that he is not following the law on a lot of different things. There's, in some cases, preliminary injunctions against things he's doing. Usually this kind of goes the same way on the progressive side that it does for the conservative side, which is that you have a lower court have a hearing, and the lower court hearing happens because people suing over something strategically pick that jurisdiction because it's more likely to succeed, because you know that you've got, you know, fill in the blank number of judges appointed by Democratic presidents versus Republican presidents. So jurisdiction shopping happens, right? And, you know, by the way, I really appreciate all the lawyers who listen to this podcast. I've got very thoughtful comments from a lot of people to my email inbox at SLP, and they call out rightfully how sometimes I use horribly wrong language about what legal thing is going on because I'm not a lawyer. And so apologies in advance. I welcome any feedback from our lawyer listeners about very imprecise language that I say. One good example was I said wrongly about that there was a permanent injunction versus, like, you know, a broadening of a preliminary injunction. And I didn't even realize there was the distinction there. So thank you, lawyer listeners. So continuing the conversation, what was my point of describing all of the different things over time that presidents have broken the law on? Sometimes it gets stopped, sometimes it doesn't, but often it does by the courts. That's how, like, knock on wood, functioning democracy is supposed to work. And so we think about what's going to happen with Trump trying to close Department of Ed. That was my end goal of getting there, by the way. That was where I was trying to end up. If Trump closes the Department of Ed completely and tries to stop all of it, that is clearly illegal. Somebody somewhere is going to file a lawsuit in a lower court in a progressive leaning jurisdiction. And a judge or judges in those jurisdictions, that jurisdiction will probably stop anything that's listed in the statute from happening. Do not fear. This stuff going on with the Department of Ed closure is a lot more oriented around primary and secondary school educations and not higher ed. Although higher ed's part of it, but higher ed, like student loan policy, is really not the priority for shutting down the Department of Ed. They want to shut down the Department of Ed because they don't want any federal government guidance or restrictions on states and localities that want to do their own thing. And they don't want any sort of federal policy making or pressure put on state and local jurisdictions by DC on especially primary and secondary schools. So that's the real reason why they're trying to close it. The student loan portfolio is actually going to continue as is. It would continue as is at Department of Ed, or they would transfer it to the Department of the Treasury, which is where the Republicans want it to end up, just because they think that by, you know, eliminating the Department of Ed, they'll get some savings. They can move those core tasks out of the Department of Ed onto the Treasury Department, where maybe it would be less of a opportunity to forgive loans as much, for example, right? That's just, I don't know, a theory of why they wanted a Department of Ed instead of Department of the Treasury. So Department of Ed, we've covered that. Don't worry about it. You're going to see terrible headlines. It's not something that you need to freak out about. One thing that would be worth being concerned, though, is this stop work order on income-based repayment, as well as forgiveness and consolidation processing. Department of Ed took this Eighth Circuit court ruling that brought in the preliminary injunction pending a final ruling by the lower court. The Department of Ed is using that as an excuse to try to really block as many things as possible while they're redoing the IDR application and consolidation application to quote-unquote comply with the court ruling. Well, obviously, I think that they want to do this anyway. And I think that they're taking the opportunity to try to cut back on all of the listing of the SAVE plan. They're trying to probably make it harder to sign up for other plans like PAY and ICR potentially. But the problem is, you know, you can't really cherry pick the court order because the court order puts the entire SAVE plan rule on hold. Well, guess what? The phasing out of the PAY and the ICR plans is part of that rule. And so I don't understand how they would be able to block those rules from people signing up for them just because the other court says they're not eligible for forgiveness, because these plans are in other regs where it specifically says that these plans count towards IBR forgiveness. So as far as I'm aware, the courts really don't have the administration should not have the ability to block signups for these already existing plans for people who want to sign up for them unless they go through the negotiated rulemaking process, which takes a long time. They could try to block it, but I bet we'll see some lawsuits over it if they do. And why would that matter? Why would that be helpful? Well, if you could get PSLF credit on something like PAY and ICR, even if they repeal it, that would be a huge relief just because of math. So a lot of people would pay way more on old IBR than they would pay on PAY, because 10% of income versus 15, because a lot of people took out loans before 2014. And then for the ICR plan, that's the lifeline for people who have high debt-to-income ratios, because the ICR plan basically at its very worst is roughly a standard six-year amortization. So that's like the escape valve for very high-income physicians with not a lot of debt that need like three payments left for PSLF. So I'm hopeful that once the dust settles on all this court stuff, we do have access to PAY and ICR, and I think that we'll retain it at least for people who are already on it, but we're going to have to pay close attention to it. Now, the Eighth Circuit, very ultra-conservative court, specifically stated that there's nothing they can do about IBR because Congress expressly authorized it. So I do think somebody should be feeling good about that, because we just did a survey, guys. 40% of y'all think that IBR 20 and 25-year forgiveness is dead by the end of this year. I do think that for the 40% of people who believe that, you shouldn't believe that, because the ultra-conservative court that's designing about canceling the SAVE plan is saying that they can't do it, right? And if they can't do it, that means the Trump administration can't do it unless they have 60 votes in the Senate, especially for past borrowers. But that still doesn't help if you're trying to sign up for IBR in the first place. So if you're trying to sign up for IBR in the first place, I do have some tips for you. First of all, you have to be patient. Supposedly, I think this will be fixed in weeks, not months, this pause in all IDR processing. And when they do open up that new online application, in theory, it'll be more streamlined for people that want to get onto IBR to get onto IBR. We'll have to see if they include those other options I mentioned, like the ICR and the PAY plans for people who really need those for special circumstances. In theory, the elimination of the SAVE plan should bring back the repay plan, technically, in terms of the regs. So, you know, it's going to be real interesting to see how they handle this whole, you know, complete hold on this SAVE plan rule. If they toss the entire SAVE plan rule, I don't see a reason why the repay plan shouldn't be back in business, which is kind of bizarre. We are also waiting, as they do this pause, this 90-day pause, we are also waiting on the House GOP to push forward their budget reconciliation bill, which we all know is coming. So the reason why this has to happen is because the Trump tax cuts expire at the end of 2025. So if the Trump tax cuts expire at the end of 2025, obviously you got unified GOP control of Washington. They do not want to have a massive income tax increase on the highest income individuals, right? That's just not something that they believe in. So they will absolutely pass something. And the question is, what's going to be in that bill? One of the things they put in that bill to help pay for their tax cuts is a $300 billion savings that they need to find in the student loan programs. And the easiest way to do that is to end the SAVE plan. But they don't want to just end the SAVE plan. They also want to take away forgiveness for the future because it costs a lot of money. And it's not a policy goal that they share with Democrats. What is this going to end up looking like? What is this going to end up being? Some of you guys read the newsletter, the Student Loan Planner newsletter, and maybe some of you all saw that we launched a paid newsletter community called SLP Insiders. So out of respect for that newsletter, I'm not going to be sharing absolutely everything I know in the world on the podcast. I'll share the vast majority of it for free. But it's pretty clear when you've got all these like legislative actions being taken, judicial actions being taken, executive orders being crafted, sometimes it pays, as my grandfather would say, to keep your mouth shut because loose lips sink ships. That was a famous saying, right, in World War II. And so I'm just going to essentially be a lot more careful with what I talk about, if that makes sense. Just thinking about what does it mean for your IDR application, you know, I think that you want to wait a couple weeks, but if you really were impatient, there is a link on Reddit with the Wayback Machine, which is an internet archiving tool that does have the 2027 version of the IDR paper application. You could download that and then also have a copy of your tax returns and complete that IDR application and then upload it to your servicer portal so that you're first in line when processing resumes for things like switching you to the IBR plan. So if you're really desperate to get in and certify things, then you could do that and try to get onto that plan. What I would suggest right now is we're going to have 2 or 3 or 4 weeks of just pure chaos and confusion and angst. And do nothing. Sit on your couch, watch good rom-coms, watch comedy, relax, don't look at your student loan stuff. I mean, that's kind of bad self-interest on my part because I have these student loan planner newsletters and consults to sell, right? But truthfully, I think you're probably better off if you just deep breath and wait a few weeks before taking any action. But if you're so anxious that you feel like you have to take action, maybe use that downloadable paper IDR application, fill it, scan it, and then upload it to your servicer portal. Please don't mail it in at this point. Just upload it to your servicer portal along with proof of income so that you're first in line for processing of IBR when it all resumes. So that's pretty much all I have for this week. I know it's going to be stressful over the next few weeks, but I'm going to be here to break it all down for you so you don't have to be stressed. So if you have any questions that you want to ask for a future pod, go to studentloanplanner.com/voicemail. In this kind of stressful time, I'd love to hear what's on your mind so that I can better address it. And then if you need any help with the student loan consults or life in general, I guess, you know, go to studentloanplanner.com. You know where to find us. Thanks for listening to the Student Loan Planner podcast. Have a great rest of your week.